Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal force, the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse, and man was the lord of the earth. He made him an olive skin from the heart of an olive tree. He compassed the earth therein, and man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam, he harnessed the lightning for hire, he drove the celestial team, and man was the lord.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a little bonus podcast. Some of you may have noticed that last Friday I made a little bit of a mistake for an hour. I accidentally uploaded this podcast, which is meant to be Monday's morning's bonus podcast about Dread Sovereign, last Thursday night at some time in the AM when the eyes and the brain were tired. I noticed the mistake after about an hour and updated it. But if you had listened to the podcast last Friday when the first hour was uploaded, you would have heard this already. So if what you heard last Friday was the story of Dread Sovereign, this is what this is going to be. But if you go back and refresh the feed from last Friday, you will get the actual podcast I meant to upload, Sabbath to Seneca, which includes some silly impersonating of Ozzy and some acoustic guitar playing. So bonus, win, right? Yes or yes? All right, let's get into it. Good evening, my friends. This is Alan Averill. This is Agitators Anonymous. This is episode 33. How do I find you? How may I find you? In what state of disrepair do I find you? Greetings from a rainy, windy, cold, miserable Dublin, where equally lonely Deliveroo drivers are the only mouse that stirs. Wending their way across this graveyard of a city, firing in high carbohydrate meals to those of us, those of you sitting on your couch in front of Netflix, stuffing your face, getting fatter and fatter, the fatted calf. So, out of the gate, I will say that this is a sort of a special episode. This is an episode where I am, in a sense, taking advantage of the audience that I've created here, taking slight advantage of all of you, in that I'm not going to waffle on about biometric passports, and I'm not going to wheel out the podcast about George Orwell or the ones that I promised before that lay unfinished on my shelf of grey matter, my frayed ends of sanity. This is going to be a podcast about Dread Sovereign. The other band that I play in, the band that I play the bass and sing. It's been a strange year. I feel in two minds about releasing music in this year. I said before, I suppose rather petulantly, if there was a primordial album to be released this year, I wouldn't have released it because, to be honest, there's just nothing in it for me. All it is then, it becomes a parade of Zoom interviews and talking on this and talking on that. And then you just sit back and watch numbers on a screen. And that's all you really do is count numbers. There's no local release show for you to look forward to. There's no tour dates. There's no movement. There's no agency. And especially with something, I suppose, as all-encompassing as Primordial, or at least my life's work, we could call it, that it would seem such a strange and terrible shame for it to end up like that. As Ivar from Enslaved said in his interview, this is not the reason why we started playing in bands. To sit and watch numbers. We started playing in bands to rehearse, to write songs, to be creative, to play gigs, to do all the human things that we intended to do. that are impossible in this anti-human moment that we're living through. And I keep using that word because I'd like it to catch on and people to start using it and see that that's kind of what it is. It's been a strange moment. I started rehearsing again with some friends, just playing some Celtic Frost and Venom covers. And it was a simple joy. It was something that reminded me of being a teenager and the reasons why you start music again. And for a couple of hours, you can forget the situation that we're in. You can expend some energy. You can have a beer, have a laugh, and ignore everything that's outside. And it very much felt like being a teenager again. In fact, it very much felt like being in Dread Sovereign again, because that's kind of what Dread Sovereign was started for. Anyway, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to play a podcast I made about the formation of Dread Sovereign, the history of Dread Sovereign, and some interesting little bits and pieces about songwriting. Obviously, I play the bass and sing, and things are a little bit different in that respect. And I'm just going to put that there. And then at the end of this podcast, I'm going to play the single, play the song Nature is the Devil's Church. Of course, there is confusion about whether I'm allowed to do that. Does the platform recognize me as the songwriter, or who has the copyright, etc., etc.? Usual problems. For sure, I wouldn't be allowed to probably do it with a primordial song, as there are publishers involved. Dread Sovereign, well, if this just comes up as a blank slate in your podcast profile, then send me a message, hit me up with a DM and go, where's Matt's song? Anyway, so consider this something like an advertising episode, as brutal and as horrible and as shameless as that sounds. A normal service will resume next week, my friends, once I have had a lobotomy or some form of brain transplant. And so I thought it might be a bit interesting to just tell the story of Dread Sovereign, seeing as in this very strange year, something that we made over the last couple of years is about to start kicking into life. Well, or rather some sort of abstraction on life. All very strange. But this is the story of Dread Sovereign. Now, it begins, I suppose, realistically. I've been playing the bass for a long time, very badly, always, never with any conviction, never really in a band, just butchering it, making this and that up. And in the mid to late 90s, I did a band with two friends called Perdition. There is a demo somewhere, four tracks. We recorded it properly. I don't know where it is. I must find it. If I find it, I'll post links to it. There, the song "The Spear," we wield the spear of Longinus by Dread Sovereign, comes from one of those demos. It's one of the few things. I think we made 25 or 30 cassettes with a cover, a proper collector's item if there really is one. I don't think any of them ever made it outside Ireland, but I will try and find it and see where it is and maybe have a re-listen to it and see if it's worth posting here for some of you. One of the members now lives in Australia. So maybe he has it. I should contact him. Anyway, so that band was called Perdition, maybe 97, 98 or something like this. Then I lived in the same house as Kieran and Mick from Primordial, amongst other people. And Mick had this little four-track Fostex recorder, an old cassette recorder that he used to make demos of riffs. And I took one of the riffs that I'd made in this band Perdition, or just sitting around playing the guitar, and we made a demo, a two-song demo, and called it Plagued, which, bizarrely enough, one of the songs is on a split 7-inch with a band from Germany whose name I cannot remember right now. I'm sure I will remember. I'll post the link. The problem for this is, well, no, it's not a problem, but I've been looking for the 7-inch to post the song, because I remember it being as quite a cool song. I've been looking for the 7-inch and I found the cover, but no record. Anyway, I will find these things and post the links. These are the beginnings of what became Dread Sovereign. So Plagued was the name that stayed with me for a while, and nothing then happened for most of the 2000s. And then somewhere around about 2010, I suppose, I felt the itch to try and do something again. But this time take a little bit more seriously and play the bass and sing. And in the beginning, it was myself and Simon from Primordial. I was playing the guitar, which if you can believe that, because if I'm a bad bass player, well, then I'm a rotten guitar player. But most of the songs on the first album, this is where they came from. And the initial, I suppose, inspiration was to sound like Cirith Ungol, Venom, Rotting Christ's demo, Satanus Tadium, early Master's Hammer, like demos Master's Hammer, very early Beherit, this kind of style. I had no interest in it being even original or anything like this. St. Vitus, that kind of thing. I just wanted to play slow, grimy music. Oddly enough, in those first few months, I was playing, if any of you play the guitar, a George Lynch Signature Series BC Rich from the mid-1980s. A very expensive guitar, which is way beyond me, with the Floyd Rose. All sorts of complications. So then we went through a few different members. Carl, who's in a band called Koskra, he played the drums for a while. A few other people here and there. And, you know, it kind of would stop and start and stop and start. And then I met Bones somewhere, I guess about 2011 maybe. And he was discussing trying out on the drums for one of Dara from Invictus's bands. And it was at a time when there was quite a vibrant punk scene and they had their own venue, which they all used to play in. And I guess some of the metalheads sort of gravitated towards us a bit, went to see some of the bands there, made friends with some of the people, released some records by mutual labels, this kind of thing. Seems like a long time ago now compared to the weird situation we're in. But I just sort of said to him, well, look, I want to start this kind of slow, sludgy doom band. He was in a band called De Novissimus, which is sort of sludgy, I Hate God style doom, I suppose. And so that's where the idea came from. I don't think anyone really believed that we'd stick at it. But Simon from Primordial was playing the drums. And yeah, we rehearsed and it was slow going because I was, you know, it was the first time I'd really rehearsed week in, week out with a drummer, trying to sing at the same time and, you know, coming up with riffs. And at that time, Primordial was playing at Roadburn, and I sort of said to the guys at Roadburn, hey, I have this scummy, filthy black doom band. Would you let us play? And at the time, Jürgen from Burning World, the label connected to Roadburn, I sort of said to him, hey man, look, if you trust me, I'll make you a cool EP and we could release it on the day of Roadburn. And he did just that. If you have the first EP of Pray to the Devil and Man, it's on Burning World Records, which is Roadburn's label. And our first gig was at Roadburn, I think 2012 maybe. It was a very strange atmosphere. Primordial played on the main stage, one of the last bands, and it didn't really work. I think that we were just a bit too, at least I was a bit too black metal maybe for the audience. And it wasn't, you know, the usual kind of, I suppose, Electric Wizard Yob style stuff. And I think, I don't think it really fitted in that well. Oddly enough, Dread Sovereign seemed to fit in much more. And we sold 3-4 times more vinyls than Primordial did, and it was a very strange experience. And lo and behold, then Dread Sovereign was born. We'd made our EP, and we'd sort of had a little foothold in the world. And it was after that that I contacted Van Records and sort of said to them, hey, look, you know, listen to this, what do you think, we could make an album maybe for Van. And this is where All Hell's Martyrs basically begins to take form. My cousin Gareth, who I did April Men with, he was sort of drafted in to make some creepy, occult, obscure sounding intros and add this almost 70s Hawkwind style retro organ sound to the music, which I think gives it this really distinctive feel. And that was initially, you know, how can we say, even though the intention wasn't there to create something particularly original, somehow I think the album is huge. It's one of my favorite things I ever did. The production is massive. The drums sound huge. The bass is in the red. Everything is right on the edge of chaos. But it's a really dark, obscure kind of record. And something I'm really proud of. And we came up with this artistic concept, me and Costin Kjörnu. And the idea, if you've noticed, that there are three characters on every album cover. They are really the three of us in the band. And we're kind of like time-traveling henchmen, something like this. We appear on each cover. And the idea of All Hell's Martyrs really came from... the most of the album is about the Cathar Rebellion, which is in the Languedoc region in southern France, I guess like 13th, 14th century. And it goes back a bit before that. It's to do with, I suppose, a rebellion against the Catholic Church. And so I opted for going for genuinely sort of historical occult or devilish lyrics that had a basis in a moment in time. They weren't fabricated or something, you know. And so writing about the Templars and the Cathars, you could fit their story into the language and the syntax of heavy metal. And it was quite liberating to not write about, to write things from a different angle than Primordial. And so on the cover you see, this is Saint Bartholomew, who was flayed alive, and his statue stands outside the Duomo in Milan. And I had a dream about this statue. And then I read the diaries of Mark Twain, the European diaries of Mark Twain, and he had also seen the same statue and had a dream about it. So the idea is that in the last song you get transmissions from the Devil Star, whatever it's called, is that Mark Twain and Saint Bartholomew meet in a dream. And that's, they kind of speak to each other back and forwards. And it's about how we vicariously live through martyrs, religious martyrs, and how their resonance echoes through centuries. Not quite the same serious vibe as Primordial. You're able to play with the imagery a bit more. And so this album came out. We did small tours of Europe. We didn't get many festivals. I mean, it became clear that that was going to be quite hard because people would want you to play an hour or two before Primordial, which didn't seem really correct. But also at the same time, for bands with no fees, flying in and people paying for flights didn't really work. Needless to say, we did tours with Procession. We did a crazy tour with Finsterforst a couple of years later. But we kept going as a band. Simon then dropped out, and Johnny from Malthusian and Conan stepped up on the drums. And that's, you know, kind of like the sort of tightness between the three of us, in that we just had a great sort of chemistry and touring together and that kind of stuff. Sort of, I guess, made me go from being a butcher of a 2 out of 10 bass player to a grasping at straws 4 out of 10. But something kind of happened, and then we were going to make another album, and so we made For Doom the Bell Tolls, still a great title, I reckon. And this one is a little bit clearer, cleaner. It's a bit more Candlemass. It's got an up-tempo song. The World is Doomed, kind of signature tune. And I still think we recorded in 2-3 days, perhaps, with Ola Yesford, who made the last Primordial. And he did a brilliant job. It just sounds great. All the tones are really strong. I mean, of course, it's 36 minutes long, and people complained, oh, it is not long enough for an album. Listen, what do you want? Quantity or quality? I don't know. Anyway. But the interesting thing is, in the year 1692, a woman called Sarah Vildes Averill was hung at Salem. She was the first woman hung at Salem, so the myth goes. And it would seem is a distant relative of mine, because my surname came from the same area of England. And she left, I suppose, on a boat to the late 17th century to go to England. The name, for example, the Dread Sovereign, is from the Mayflower Edict. They call James the First, within that document, the Dread Sovereign. I think it means feared ruler. Well, that's how I interpret it. And so Sarah Averill was the first woman hung at Salem. And so you can see her death warrant in the CD. You should be able to see it properly in the vinyl, but I guess the layout got a little bit moved around. I can post it underneath this. All very interesting. So on the cover you see the same three characters, the three of us, building a gallows to hang her. So then we do some more touring of Europe, a few little festivals, and the chemistry is strong. The chemistry is great. And for me, I'd always wanted to have a band that rehearsed every week, that you could rely on, that every Thursday evening you went to rehearsal and it was something to look forward to, make some noise, have a few beers, that kind of thing. Because Primordial hadn't really been that band for a long, long time. We got together when we had to do something. We didn't get together when we had nothing to do, basically. So you could not see anybody for 5 or 6 or 7 months. Of course, we haven't seen each other now in that same situation, but things hang a little bit more perilously than they did a few years ago. Anyway, so after this, we have a couple of, you know, a few tours, like I said, Finsterforce, a few other little shows. And we then hit a kind of little bit of bump of not knowing what to do. We're going to make another EP for Van. And then I think because the new album you're going to hear coming up soon, Alchemical Warfare, is a bit more up-tempo. It's got a bit more Venom, Carnivore, Motorhead, Tank, a little bit more of a kick in the ass. It just didn't really seem to make sense for Van Records. And so we agreed to move on to Metal Blade. No disrespect to Van Records. They're awesome. Sven is an awesome guy. But we just sort of moved on to Metal Blade. And so that's where the new one is coming. It's a bit more rough and tumble. It's a bit more growly. It's a bit more nasty. It's also a bit more, I suppose, the musicianship is a little bit more, it's a bit tighter. And Alchemical Warfare, again, a sort of play on words that makes me happy, that seems to annoy other people. The idea is that we are the three laboratory assistants in Isaac Newton's laboratory. And he is trying to discover the secret of alchemy, which obsessed him as a man during his lifetime. He obsessed over the secret of alchemy. And so I decided this would be a great theme for a cover. And the lyrics are, again, they have serious undertones, even though they're a bit more, there's a bit more, no, I won't say black humour, but a sort of black mood to them. And I am able to write them a bit more freely than I would be able to do in Primordial. You can write She-Wolves of the Savage Season, which is really, I just wanted to write a song about how strong women can be. And that kind of song that when you play live, people can hear it and go, ah, here's my fucking song. Simple old heavy metal kind of tropes. But fundamentally, yeah, The Secret of Alchemy been kind of obsessing me. And it's in the last Primordial album as well. This idea that alchemy is a spiritual journey and not an actual process. Anyway, Alchemical Warfare. And so that's the kind of potted story of Dread Sovereign. It's 8 or 9 years long. It was intended to be this sort of obscure occult doom with a very heavy tone of black metal. But the reality is I just wanted to do a band that sounded like Venom, Cirith Ungol, Hellhammer, Saint Vitus, Hawkwind, Master's Hammer, Rotting Christ, that kind of thing. And it's morphed into this other thing. And here we stand about to release album number 3. And hopefully next year we can kick on and start to tour and play some festivals, because the reaction so far seems to have been really positive. So with a video dropping next week, I thought it would be a clever thing, a good thing to do, to maybe just tell the story of Dread Sovereign a little bit. And it's different for me because I get to play the bass and write maybe 70% of the music. Not as much on this new one. Before most of the songs were, like the first album, most of the songs would have been mine and Bones help arrange them. But yeah, he's got his own style, and that's going to be clear in the new album. It's an interesting thing to be in charge. Or let's say with Primordial, we have a bunch of old cranky tyrants all pushing and pulling in different directions, sometimes with ideas about aesthetics and imagery. But for Dread Sovereign, the whole thing really is the aesthetic is my vision of it. And it can be as wacky and off the wall as I want it to. I kind of wanted, like I said, to be assistants in Isaac Newton's laboratory, and Costin made this amazing album cover, which you'll see. And you can run with that and expand on the whole artwork along those themes. And it's been really challenging, refreshing and interesting to be able to work on all these things yourself and not have someone second guess you or go, I don't like this color or that color. And it's also been nerve-wracking, really nerve-wracking, because it's like, for the first time you had to stand on a stage being the first band of three playing to 50 people in a room who are going, ugh, I don't know if I really like this. And the first 5 or 10 gigs playing the bass and singing was hard. I think my ego took a good kicking because people come up and go, eh, well, it's okay. Because Primordial was always used to conquering or whatever you want to say. And so it was good for the ego to get a bit of a kicking and challenge yourself and try and get back up and go, right, fuck it, I'm going to make this succeed. And then I began to find a groove with playing and singing that I could really enjoy it. And now some of my favorite gigs can be within a tiny bar to 50, 75 people with Dread Sovereign. And hopefully next year we're going to get to be able to do exactly that. Let's hope. Anyway, my friends, the story of Dread Sovereign is a curious one. And there is some new music coming soon. So check out the links. So there you go, my friends. That was Dread Sovereign, Nature is the Devil's Church. No doubt it blew the ears off some of you listening to the podcast normally. Well, apologies for that. It is raucous and rabble-rousing stuff. Anyway, my friends, normal service will be resumed next week once I have more control over my grey matter, as I said. Follow me on Instagram at nemthiang_primordial. Patreon, if you want other bonus podcasts and this and that and the other, and songs and random bits and pieces, www.patreon.com/AlanAver with two capital A's. You can pre-order the Dread Sovereign album from www.metalblade.com, or just search the name of the song on YouTube and you'll see the video. For some reason, the video is blocked in Nordic countries. We don't really know why. There are elements of the movie Hoxon, this old Swedish movie that's 100 years old in it, which somehow seems to be copyrighted, even though it's beyond the statute of limitations or whatever you want to call it like that. But anyway, episode 33 ends as the story of Dread Sovereign. I thank you, Metal Never Bends.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.